Good morning. You guys all awake? When I saw this session, they gave me this session at 8:30 in the morning. I'm like, are people going to be awake on the last day of Tech Ed to come and see this thing in the morning? Is everybody staying for the party tonight? Yeah, party ought to be awesome. Universal Studios tonight. So hope you're not flying out. Hope you're hanging around. My name is Scott Hunter. I'm a program manager at Microsoft. I work on both the Visual Studio side of web development, and I work on the framework side of web development. So the team I work for builds all the web components of Visual Studio that you might use. We also build all the frameworks like ASP.NET, MVC, Web API that you could use as well. My hope today is to show you a bunch of the new features that we built into Visual Studio 2012 for web developers. I'm not a big slide person, so what I'm going to do, this is kind of my slide right here. After this, I'm just going to go through the product and show a bunch of things off. So I'll just quickly go through the things that we're going to talk about today. One is round tripping. This is a feature that, is anybody in the room actually using Visual Studio 2012 yet? Maybe a few? One of the reasons that you typically can't use one of our newer versions of Visual Studio is as soon as you open a project in it, you can't open the project in the old product again. And round-tripping allows you to continue to use both products at the same time, and I'll actually demo that. I'm going to talk about templates, some of the modifications we've made to templates. I'm going to dig deep into editors. Editors, we've done a lot of work on our HTML editor, our editor for if you're using web forms, our editor for CSS, our editor for JavaScript. We've got some great features for previewing your pages in a multitude of browsers. We've got an awesome feature called Page Inspector, which allows you to I don't know if you've ever been like me, but I've been in a website, and I'm like, hey, I want to change that element, but I can't find where in the site. I've got hundreds of pages, and I've got CSS files, and I can't find where I would actually make a change. And Page Inspector is a cool product that we have that solves that problem. We're going to talk about NuGet a little bit. I don't know how many people are using that, but I'm going to show how to update our existing templates on the fly, and then how to add some new functionality, and then we're going to go to some cool publishing where I'm going to show how you can actually publish an app up into the cloud or to any hoster and then actually change your database locally and have that change in your database percolate up to your application. So what I thought I'd start off with is I've got a project here. I'm in Visual Studio 2010, and I'm just going to create a MVC3 project. We'll call it Round Trip. And I will run it just to prove that it works. And this was the number one feature that used to be on our User Voice site. We have a site, asp.net.uservoice.com, where you can go and vote up or vote down features or suggest things you want in our product. So, I suggest if you actually have any recommendations or features you want, you can go there. But the number one thing we've had for every version of Visual Studio that I've been around for is, hey, the new version of Visual Studio comes out, I open a project in it, and I can no longer open it in my old, the old version of the product. So I'm using Visual Studio 2010 here. That ran fine. I'll close Visual Studio 2010 out. Let me make this go away. And now what I'll do is jump into my folder here. Here's my round trip application. I'm going to right click on it, say open with, and I'm going to say I want to open it with 2012. And what's going to come up is you're going to get a report coming up telling me that it migrated my project. But do note that it says this file was modified to enable it to be opened in Visual Studio 2010 SP1 and earlier versions in this version of the product. So even though I've actually brought this up in Visual Studio 2010, it runs in Visual Studio 2010. And the reason I think this is important to you guys is if you want to go home after the conference, download Visual Studio 2012, and then still be able to take advantage of all the features that I'm going to show today, because most of the features I'm showing today are just tooling features. You can use Visual Studio 2012 against your existing projects, and then go back into your project, right-click, open with Visual Studio 2010. It opens, no complaints, and it still runs. So seriously, so everything I show today, you're welcome to go home and grab the new version of Visual Studio. It should not affect you. You can actually have one guy on your team use the new product and try it out and not affect everybody else on the team. So that's round tripping. Let me close that out. I've got this mega project that I'm going to open up here called Web 11. And one of the things I didn't do before I jumped up here is I didn't change my fonts so you guys could see. But I wanted to show a new feature in Visual Studio called Quick Launch. And I don't know about you guys, but if you come over to this thing and select options, there's a lot of stuff in here. It's kind of hard to find stuff. I have the circle of patience going on there. There we go. And so with this quick launch, you can just come up here and start typing stuff. So I'll type font. And it took me right to my fonts. I'll bump this up to like 18 for you guys. Save it. And so that's quick launch. It's not really a web feature, but it's a feature that is pretty cool. And now let's run my project here. So I've got a project that kind of shows off a bunch of things that we can do in Visual Studio. We call it Web 11 because when we were building all the Visual Studio 2012 features, it was last year, and it was the 2011 wave for us. What I want to do is I want to jump in and show some features that aren't huge, but when you start using them, they will blow you away. So I'm going to jump into the editor, move some panes away. So I've got this element that says Web 11 rocks, and I want to make that bigger. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and change the H3 to an H1. And I don't know if you paid attention there, but when I changed the tag on the left side, it changed the tag on the right side. And it works both ways. I could come over to the tag on the left side, our right side, change it, and it changes the same way. So let's... These are just small things that we were working on as a team, and we're like, wow, that's stupid. Why didn't we do that like 5 years ago? In fact, a lot of the things I'm going to show you, you're going to go, why did we do that 5 years ago? Something else is I've got this doc type. And this doc type is what determines what version of HTML Visual Studio thinks that I'm actually developing in. And so, for example, right now it's saying my doc type is HTML 1.0, XHTML 1.0, which means it's not going to know about things like video tags. So if I start trying to type HTML5 video tags, I get no IntelliSense for that. In fact, I'll probably get a squiggle if I... it's going to go, I don't know what that is, that's bad. So I'm going to turn that off. In the past, just kind of like this H1 thing I was showing you, what you had to do is you had to come up to this drop-down list at the top of the page and change it every time you wanted to target something. So what we've done in this version of Visual Studio is I'm going to load my master page up, and it just happens to be that I have a doc type in here. I'm going to uncomment that. And I'm going to comment in the HTML5 doc type. And you might have noticed that as soon as I did that, the doc type on the page changed. So what we're doing now is we're actually going and finding out your project, finding your page, and determining the doc type automatically for you. Which means if I come and start trying to type something like video, now we know you're doing HTML5, bang, that works. So something else, speaking of HTML5, the HTML editor is fully HTML5 aware now, so it knows all of the new tags, it knows all the new attributes, to the point that I can do things like, I've got an audio file here, I can just drag it over here, we'll automatically put an audio tag for that, set the controls on. It gets better. Yeah. In the morning, it sounds good to me, so. But we didn't stop just there. I mean, as I said, I have another example. We do video as well, so if you just drag video files in, we'll create video tags for you automatically as well. This is kind of calm and serene here. Bear looking at birds in the water. Okay, the next thing I want to show is I'm going to show some enhancements we made for web form developers, and then I'm going to get into some CSS and other things. So what I thought I would do is add a data control to this page. So I'm going to do a grid view. We'll call it tech ed or something like that. One of the things we hear all the time is, why is run at equal server still there? Don't you know when the ASP tag is there? We did not fix that. One of the things that we did do, though, is a lot of our controls are a lot smarter. So if I do like item type, and this is where I tell it what type of data I'm going to show, we now give IntelliSense for that. So it's going to go and let me select my person. So I got full drop-down list. It went and found stuff. One of the things that we used to make you have to do, if you wanted to wire any events or stuff up, you had to go into this design view, which takes a while to load. I'm using a new feature here. This is something called model binding. And in model binding, what you do is you create like a select method. And it used to be if you want to have any kind of like event hooked up, you had to go in that design view and it would do that for you. You might notice when I type select method, I've got this drop option that popped down, create new method. I'll type that. It went and created a method for me. Now what's cool, if I go into the code behind, not only did it write the method for me, but it was smart enough to go look and see what type of data that I'm trying to display and automatically fill that in for me. So we're actually doing, number one is all events can now be created in the HTML editor, so you don't have to flip to the design view. And when we are creating event handlers for you, we're actually looking at the context of your control and automatically putting stuff in and even giving you a bunch of comments. I can actually write some code here under db.persons. That should work. And I'll come here and I'll change one more thing as well. I think it wants to have a data keys. We'll run this and see if it works. The demo gods have blessed me. Yeah, so I got some data showing up here, and so all that's staying within the text editor. So the idea is, if you're a developer that's comfortable with the editor, we want to let you stay in the editor as much as possible. That we go even further than that. If I come here and I do show design view, and what I might want to do in design view is I might want to come down to this control and I want to bring up some of this, what we call this Chrome, and maybe auto format or change some of the settings for that. This is what we used to force you to do. Now, from the text editor, I can move my mouse up here. And there's an underline on the A in ASP there. If I move my mouse down over that, I get a little chevron that pops up. I click this, and I'm in the same thing that you saw from Design View. Come on, I got two people, more. You guys got to help me, it's early. So, and for fun, I'll do auto format, and we'll do something like classic, just to show that it works. It puts all the goop in. And I'm good to go, and I've got color. So that's showing that, and we do that for everything. So if I want to add a button, it works the same way. Unclick equals create new event. Notice that it actually found events that actually, methods on the page that match. So if you already had something there, you could just select it from the list or create another one. Bingo. So that's pretty cool. So let me just nuke this code. I might show one more thing here. Remove all this ugly stuff. As I was saying, I can do like an on, I do an update. Update method equals create new. Just to show once again that we're doing context, we do try to write the code for you. All I'd have to do right here is add a line of code here that says my database, look up the thing, and then basically save the changes here. So we're trying to write all the code for you. You can erase it, but the actual code snippets we put in here are pretty good. So let me delete this. I'm going to erase the grid view. Don't want that anymore. And another small thing that we did that's kind of cool is, let me go grab and maybe put those audio tags back in or something. So I'll put an audio tag back in. A lot of times when I'm building a page, I might want to take some of the content on the page and build my own control from that. And what I would do today is go and create a control and copy and paste and a bunch of stuff like that. Now I can come in here and highlight a bunch of text. I can right-click on it. And I have this new method called extract a user control. My user control. And I can press OK. That content goes away. My user control is put in. And over here, if I open the My User Control up, you can see we put the stuff in. So you can just easily, in the editor, just go block and copy a bunch of stuff, make controls out of it. And if I'm lucky, the demo gods will let me live. They did. Good. There's the audio at the bottom. Thank you. So the next thing I want to do is I'm going to show some of the changes we made in the CSS editor. This affects all kinds of ASP or all kinds of web projects, whether you're MVC, ASP, just raw HTML. What I will do is I'll go to my content folder. And I will open up the site CSS. So one of the things that we start talking about these editors that I want to talk about is, I don't know if you've been in the CSS editor before or you've been in our JavaScript editor before, but they're not very good. And what I mean by they're not very good is in Visual Studio, every type of file we have to go write an editor for that type of file. And so one of the things that you might have noticed if you actually tried editing a CSS file or a JavaScript file in the earlier product is once you got in there, all the things you might have been used to just didn't work. Like if you wanted to go block comment something and block uncomment something, it only works in C# files. It doesn't work in CSS files. Oh, I want to go and indent or unindent something, or I want to auto-format the text. Those don't work. One of our big goals in Visual Studio 2012 was to make the editors for CSS and JavaScript first-class citizens, to have the same features that you would expect to see over in the C# world, C# or VB world. And we've done that. So this is one of the things that's pretty cool. I don't know if anybody's seen this before. This is the our color picker. And so what I did is I just went, selected this color, and I pressed Control Space, which is the thing that brings up IntelliSense. And you see it brought up this this bar with a bunch of colors. And you might ask, where did those colors come from? In the past, we probably would have randomly selected 12 colors that we thought were cool. But what we're doing now is those colors, it actually scanned all the CSS in my project and found the colors I was already using. So it's basically offering me the colors that are used the most often in my file, which kind of makes sense. I can select one of those, or I can press this magic button here, and I get this really cool, and come over here, I can make it all red. And if I run, refresh, ooh, there we go. So CSS color editor, one of my favorite things, really cool. So the next thing I want to show is, let's go, change the page. So what I want to do here is we added full snippet support for CSS and JavaScript. So one of the things I can do now is I can just start typing border-radius, and I get a nice thing telling me what my options are. And what's pretty cool here is in the past, what we would do is we would basically put the IE version of whatever IE supported into your page. You might notice that what we do now is when I put our border radius in, I put the Mozilla support for it, I put the WebKit support for it, and I put the standard HTML5 support for it. So so we target all browsers out of the box. So if you do any CSS with a snippet, and we'll put Chrome in there, we'll put Safari in there, we'll put Firefox in there, we'll put IE in there. We put them all in there, and so that's, you know, if you're writing stuff, you shouldn't have to go look up how to do that on some other browser. So what I'll do is I'll put border radiuses on both of these. And what that'll do is that's basically putting rounded corners on my page. So you might notice that the corners here rounded as a result of that. While I'm doing that, I'll scroll down a little bit more. And I might want to make my menus actually have border radius as well. And this is, I was saying before, these are now rich first-class citizen editors. So if I come in here and do a Control-K-U, I can now block uncomment and comment CSS, something we didn't do before. And now if I run it, I should get nice, pretty rounded menu corners as well. So I've got fancy menus, all rounded. I've got my wild red color that matches my shirt. Now I want to show something else. While I'm here, this file, if you look at it, it's all left justified. But the way CSS works is, as I build a style, I can then build a sub-style that says, hey, my first style might affect a div, but then I want to affect a button inside of a div. And to see that, I might want to have my CSS auto-format and maybe indent to show me that. So what I'm going to do is I purposely flattened the formatting of this page out last night. I'll come in here and say format the document. And now as I scroll down, what you're going to see is, here's an example of that. I've got a header, which affects headers. But then I've got .header h1, which affects h1s inside of headers. And you see we're smartly indenting that stuff. So as you scroll through your file, there you go. Here's another one where we do it on menu. You kind of get the idea of what we're trying to do here. So whole goal here is just to make this editor feel as natural as the C# editor does. So that's a couple of things I can do there. I've got one more kind of crazy thing that I'll do. I've got a page here. I'll show a few more interesting things. So I've got this page in my application called CSS3. It's got these nice, pretty graphic icons that talk about HTML5. I think we grab these off the HTML5 site. I'll use a few more snippets. I'll do a border radius. And on this border radius, I'll show that I can even take that 15 pixels. I can say, I'd really like that to be 10 pixels. Save that. They all change to 10 pixels. And then I could say, maybe I want to do a box shadow here. Put a shadow on everything. And then what I'll do is I'll just copy this here. I'll stick it down here. And once again, to show another feature is, this seems trivial, you're probably going, I can't believe it didn't do this before, but if I can now block indent. Imagine that. 2012, you can block indent CSS. So if I run that now, and go here and refresh the browser so it kills the cache, I got these nice pretty boxes with shadows on them now. I'll do one more thing just to be kind of cool. I'm in a hover tag here. I'll do a transform. This transform basically says, when I hover over this, rotate it by 90 degrees. Now I'll get this really cool effect. As I move my mouse around, everything kind of jumps around. So once again, you know, I don't think you could have done this very easily a couple years ago. It's just showing how easy it is to use this stuff now. So that's the CSS editor. And one final thing in the CSS editor is, you know, you can now shrink everything down just like you can in C#, full outlining support. I want to call that out because when I come over here, I'm going to jump into some JavaScript for a second and show some of the things we've done for JavaScript. Jump into custom here, and I'll start with go to definition. And once again, you'll see in JavaScript now we do the same kinds of things. You can block indent. Okay. As I said, we want to make all the editors have the same functionality. So you can see I've got the outlining in JavaScript. One of the things that I think is really cool that we did in JavaScript is, if I put my mouse on this, if you've ever used in C#, you might have used the F12 feature, which allows you to go to definition. You're on something, and you press F12, and it takes you there. We don't have that in JavaScript until today. And so now I'm on the ABC function, and if I press F12, my cursor will jump me up to the definition of that right there, which is, before you applause, this is much better. So I'm going to come down here. I've got some jQuery down here, and I'm calling the HTML function in jQuery. Let me press F12. Bing, I'm in jQuery. There it is, right there. So once again, as I said, this stuff to me feels like, duh, but something else we've done that's pretty cool is we want to make sure that we understand all the standards and stuff out there. And so one of the things that JavaScript programmers can do if they want is there's something, this notion of strict mode. If anybody's ever programmed in Visual Basic, Visual Basic has this strict mode as well, which is like, hey, Visual Basic 1 let you do a lot of dangerous things. And so in later versions of Visual Basic, they created this strict mode that said, if I turn that on, I'll get warnings and errors for things that I shouldn't be using. I've got a page here that creates a function inside of a method, and that's inside of a block, and that's typically not a good idea, because how are you going to call this guy? This guy's inside of some other block. And what I'm going to show is if I uncomment out the comments here and turn the strict mode on, that's all you do in JavaScript to turn strict mode on is put use strict at the top of your page, you'll then note that I get a squiggle on the function. And if I move over it, it basically will tell me the reason why that's bad. So in strict mode, function declarations cannot be nested inside a statement or block. They may only appear at the top level or directly inside a function body. So once again, just trying to make our editors fully aware of all the things that you can do. I've got a few more demos of JavaScript stuff. Let me go back in here. So this is something we've had IntelliSense in things like jQuery since, I think, VS 2008 is when we added that. But we're adding the same IntelliSense support that we have in C# into JavaScript in the newer versions of the tool. And I've got an example here. These descriptions here kind of define how these things work. And so I've got a very simple example here, but when you actually download and install Visual Studio 2012, we've taken this same level of IntelliSense that I'm showing you right here, and we've applied it all the way through jQuery. So if you use jQuery with VS 2012, you will get much, much richer IntelliSense than you got before. And I'll just do a quick example of this. In my foo here, if I try to call add, you can see I get the exact same kind of IntelliSense that you would expect, maybe, in C#. Number P1, number P2, 1 comma... Actually, I want to call ABC first. ABC, it knows that each of the parameters are strings. I call that. For add, if I look at the IntelliSense declaration I have here, it's got multiple signatures, which is what you expect in C# if you actually have something with overloads. You can, and now you can see I can move back and forth through the IntelliSense or the description just like I could in C#. So basically we're trying to bring more and more of that to this. Okay. We got one more thing that I want to show in IntelliSense. And what I will do is I will come up here to this quick launch bar before. So when we do IntelliSense in web, what we do is we have to go look at your files to determine what JavaScript files you're including. Sometimes it's hard for us to do that, and we might not be able to figure that out. So there's a file sitting inside of my script folder called references.js. And what this does is this contains a list of the files that we would give you IntelliSense on. And so you might ask yourself the question, what if I don't put my scripts in scripts? What if I put my scripts in FooBar or MyScripts or whatever? How does that work? In earlier versions of Visual Studio, we only looked for this file in this folder. So if you didn't use our scripts declaration, you were out of luck. So now I can come up here, I can type IntelliSense. It'll take me to directly to the part in the options. And you'll notice here that I can now, from here, I can tell the tool where to look for references. So now you can, no matter how you program, where you put your scripts, you're covered by IntelliSense in Visual Studio. So that is that. So let me close out. And I'm going to show Page Inspector. So as I was saying, I've got a simple app here. Let me make sure it's in the perfect state. Isn't it broken? Let's run it, let's see. Okay, so I've got my app here. This happens to be an MVC application, but it could be any app. And something didn't look right here. I've got home, about, and I've got underscore contact. Why is there an underscore there? What have I done wrong? And so how would you find that? What you might do is you might just open up your project and start digging through files and trying to find where that content is. We have this great new feature called Page Inspector. I can right-click on my project, and what I will say is View in Page Inspector. And so what happens when I do View in Page Inspector is it launches this little browser window, and what I can do is I can come down here and do a couple things. I got a file tab here. If I click files, what it's going to show me is it's going to show me each of the files that makes up this page. So this page is made up of a layout file, a partial file, and an index file. So as I'm browsing around my site, I can find exactly where we got all the content from. I can press this cool inspect button over here. So now I'm in inspect mode, maybe. And you might notice that as I move around, let me jump over here. As I move around in VS, we are actually finding the source code for the actual content that I'm looking at in the browser and highlighting it. So as I come here and move my mouse over the word contact, you can see what's wrong is there's no LI around contact. So I'll come over here. I'll put the LI around the contact. And you might notice that Page Inspector then noticed that, hey, you've actually changed stuff. I'm not showing the right thing, so it says press Control Alt Enter. Now contact is fixed. I'm showing a very simple application. If you have a large application with a lot of pages and a lot of stuff, it could be a lot more complicated to go and find stuff like that. So this is a really slick tool. Thank you. I think it's awesome. And you can do other stuff with it as well. So I'm up here, and I can click on homepage, and I can go down to HTML, and I'll go to styles. Let me just make this window a little bit bigger. And I can kind of experiment. Experiment with stuff. I can come up here to color, select color. And check out all the styles that are associated with what I'm looking at here. Go back up here. One of the challenges of Page Inspector is if you're when you're presenting. You can run out of screen real estate just because it's got so much content on the page at one time. But I can easily find styles. If I then click on a style, you'll note that over in VS, it jumped me right to where that style is from. If I click font, margin, it'll jump me right where those are. Let me go find something else just to bring that point home. Go here, color, style. Kind of cool. So I can once again look at files, look at my HTML, I can inspect. It's kind of crazy. So that's a great feature, and I think you will find if you use a tool like Embraco or any CMS, this thing is really spectacular because it's super, super hard to find stuff in those kinds of projects. The next thing I want to show is I want to show NuGet, which is funny. NuGet is this feature that we added last spring. Stats.nuget.org. Is people in the room familiar with NuGet? Has anybody used it? Probably about half. So one of the things that we've done in Visual Studio 2012 is, first off, let me explain what NuGet is. NuGet is what we call a package manager. And what a package manager does is it's a way of taking DLLs and content files and putting them together in a package so they can easily be installed, upgraded, or uninstalled from a project. And so what we've done in Visual Studio 2012 is all of our projects are based on NuGet. So if I come up here and go to Tools, and I go to the Library Package Manager, and I say Manage NuGet Packages for Solutions, you'll find that my project's got a lot of packages in it already. So I'll go to Installed Packages. We install Entity Framework this way, jQuery, jQuery UI. And the reason we do this is in the past, we've shipped Visual Studio, like Visual Studio 2010, we shipped it a couple years ago. And by the time we shipped it, the version of jQuery that was in it was already out of date. And so if you're, you know, want load Visual Studio 2010 up today and create a project, you're like, why am I using jQuery from 3 years ago? The idea here is I can go to this Update tab, and what it'll do is it'll show me all the files in my project that there's, or all the packages in my project that have been updated since we actually released things. So since we released the RC VS 2010, there's been a new jQuery. So let's look what I've got in my project today. So I go in my project today. I'm running 1.6.2. I can come into NuGet. I can do updates. I'll see update jQuery. Close. I'm now running 1.7.2. If I run my application and I view source, you can see we're now including 1.7.2. That shows you how easy it is to go modify your project to use new stuff. And it goes beyond that. I loaded this page that takes a while to come up. Since March of last year, we have had 6,000 packages uploaded to our site. 47,000 versions, 47,000 packages if you count all the updates and different versions. We've had 12 million downloads. We had 10 million. We basically do about a million downloads a month now. And you can see our, if I do our download trend, you can just see our curve just going almost straight up as more and more people are using this. But I don't want to just stop here. I just showed that you can take your projects as they come out of the box and you can easily update them. Another part of NuGet is you can add new functionality to applications as well. So I could come in here and I could say, let's go to NuGet packages. I'll go to online. These are some of the most popular ones that are out there. I can go take a project, something like Elma. Elma's a logging utility. I can go take Elma, press install, and installing a package does a lot more than just copy files. It can go add assemblies, references to assemblies, it can modify config. So what happened when I did this, when I added this Elma, was it went and modified my web config to turn Elma on, it added the DLLs. Elma's a logging system for, imagine you publish your website up to the world, and errors are occurring, and you don't have a good way to find those errors. So what I'll do here, just to prove this, is I'll take my app and I'll purposely blow it up. Always fun to blow stuff up. So I'll go to my controller. Oh, this is something new in Visual Studio 2012 as well. We now have this really nested solution explorer. In the past, you could only go down to the file level. Now if I actually open a file up, I can go down to the actual methods inside the file, so I can say, hey, take me right to the contact method. So right inside the Solution Explorer, drill down, go exactly to the method in your file that you want. And then what I'll do is I'll throw a new exception. Crashed at TechEd 2012. VS will complain because I got too many return types. So you also notice that when I installed this, it also popped a file up with directions on how to use this. The way you basically use Elma is when errors occur on your app, you can go to your app's name /elma.axt to see what those errors are. So I'll run this app, and then I'll go to contacts and bang, blow. But then later on, I might want to go, hey, I'm going to go check on my site and see how it's doing. So I'll go and turn that on, and you can see that Elma caught that exception was thrown from my site. One of my customers saw that. I can click details, give me a full stack dump, show me all the headers and stuff that were going on at the same time. So it's pretty cool that without having to go figure out, you know, normally what you would do is go to the Elma website, download some zip, read a bunch of stuff to copy stuff all over your project, then run it. This automates that whole thing. And then the funny thing is, you know, hey, I decided that was great, but don't really want it. I'll throw that exception away so we don't hit that any time later in the demos. I can come back up here, say manage NuGet packages, show me what's installed. And we'll do Elma, and we'll just say, I don't want that anymore. And you will find that it's gone. So not only can you keep things up to date, it's very easy to install and try stuff. There's actually even a company called Sonatype that has a product that actually takes the NuGet gallery and does something cool for it. Before I joined Microsoft, I worked at I worked for the oil companies in California. And before we could actually even use a library like that, they had to make sure that it was like on some approved list. It didn't contain GPL code. Somebody had scanned it to make sure that it wasn't infringing on code from some other project. If you go to sonatype.com, they have a product that hooks into NuGet and allows you to do that. You basically can say, hey, I only want to see packages that are made by, that are not GPL, that have been vetted to make sure they don't have code from somewhere else. So if you're afraid of like letting somebody have access to all 6,000 packages, that's a way that your corporation can actually drive that stuff down. I want to talk about one other quick thing, and I'll get on to another demo. If I go to properties here, and I go to web, normally in the past, when we run our applications, we've been running our applications in Cassini. Cassini is a web server that's built into ASP.NET. And that's great, but when you publish to an IIS in your corporate environment or an IIS in the cloud, you'll find that IIS and Cassini are not the same things. There's rewrite modules. There's all these modules that you can use to actually enhance IIS, but Cassini doesn't support those. And so with Visual Studio 2010, Service Pack 1, we enabled support for IIS Express, and now it's the default in VS 2012. And what that means is you're basically running against almost a real IIS in the development environment. So if you want to add SSL, if you want to add IIS modules, you can actually do that right in your project, and they'll work because we're running a version of IIS that does not run as a service. We actually execute it when it starts. So that is that. Let me... The next thing I want to do a demo of or talk about is publishing. So we've had these publishing features in Visual Studio for a couple years, and they're okay, but I don't think they've been great. But it's starting to get pretty good now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to use Azure, just because we just did it recently. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go up to Azure and I'm going to show a couple things here that are pretty cool. I'm going to show how I can publish an application to the cloud, or to a hoster, or even to one of your internal machines. And then I'm going to show how, after I publish to the cloud, or the remote site, what if I change my application by changing the database or something? How do I percolate that change back up to the production site as well? I'm going to show how to do that. So what I'll do is I'll just come into Azure. If you were any of the keynotes or any stuff like that, you probably were probably aware that the features I'm going to show today are free. You can do 10 of these for free. I'm going to go to Azure and say, hey, I want to create a website. I'll call it TechEd Demo. And I went through and said, I want to create a database with it as well. Demo 2, man. It worked last night, and I deleted it. So somebody has stolen my URL already. This is going to be a problem in these things. It's like you're going to have to come up with really weird names. So we'll call this ticket demo 2 as well. I'll give it a password. And so what will happen is it'll take Azure, if I'm lucky, 10 or 15 seconds to actually create the website. Not only is it creating the website, it's creating a database as well. There's my website created. You'll notice that I've got a database. So that's all good. So I'm going to put that away for a second, and I'm going to go focus back on my app. So I've got this app sitting over here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to add some data to this app. So I'm going to right-click on here. And I'm going to say, I don't want to do that. I'm going to add so I'm using a feature here called Entity Framework Code First, because it works the way I like to work as a developer. I like to, if I'm going to build an app, I'll typically start by building an app with my own classes, and then at some point I'll go map a database to my classes. So what I'm going to do here is I'll create a person. And in my class, this is, once again, this is probably a Visual Studio feature. I don't know how many people know this. Does everybody know that you can type P-R-O-P and then press tab and get this nice IntelliSense to person ID? I type prop, tab, string, first name. What's funny is I heard a half applause there. Whoa! I see the light. I'm normally not this way, but 8:30 in the morning, the last day of tech ed. Got to let loose a little bit. So that prop thing has actually been there since like 2005. But yeah, so all of us internal. That's why you're a tech ed. That's why you pay the big bucks to come here, so you can find out all the things we've been using as developers inside of Microsoft for the last 10 years. So seriously, if you're creating a class, just type the word prop and press tab, and it does that nice thing where it gives you the type and the get setter and stuff automatically for you. So I went and created this type. I'm going to build so Visual Studio is aware of the type. And this is an MVC app. I could do this in web forms as well. I can do stuff like this in web forms as well. I'm going to create a controller. I call it a person controller. It's invalid. So I'll select my person type, and then I don't have a database context yet, so I'm going to let it actually create one for me, and I guess this will be Tech Ed Demo 2, since somebody else in this building has stolen my name. And I'll press Add. And what this does is this will actually put some Entity Framework code in for me automatically. So I've got my person object, which I would use. It also went and created this context for me. This is an EF code first context where it's got a type of DB set of persons, which means I can access this persons using this regular code. And it went and built me pages. So it built me a index page, a details page, a create page, an edit page on the fly for me. So I'm probably going to change these in the long run, but as I'm starting to develop, it kind of helps just to see what all that code would look like. I'm going to close all this stuff out. So there's this cool feature that we started doing earlier this spring called EF Code First Migrations. And migrations is the way that you would actually build a database and then change it and be able to try something and go forwards or go backwards. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to enable migrations. So I'm in the NuGet Package Manager console, and what happens is when Entity Framework is installed, it installs commands in here, and you can actually run these commands against your application. So I'm going to say enable migrations. That turns this feature on, opens a little file up. And so I haven't run my app yet, but I know that I've my first step is I created that person ID, I created that the first name property and the last name property. Let me make this thing sticky here. So I'm going to say I want to add a migration, and that's basically telling the system that I want to put a login saying that block of unit, those three things is something. So I'll say this is initial. I cannot spell. And so what it does is it goes out and says, hey, I looked at your data, your model, and what that means is when I create your database, I'm gonna say the first thing I need to do is put a person ID in, a first name in, and a last name in. And if I actually wanted to go back down, backwards, I said, hey, I'm done, I don't like that. The down step is just go drop that table because that table doesn't need to be there. And so the final thing I'll do here is I've got this migration. Now I can just tell it to update my database. And it just did that. And so now if I go look at my Server Explorer over here, I go to Tech Ed Demo 2 Context, I go to Tables, I've got a people table, and I've got a bunch of columns in it. So, and my app will run now. I can go to person. I can create one of these things. Bingo, that's good. So now what I want to do is I might want to publish that to Azure. So let's see what that looks like. And then I'm going to change the database after I publish to Azure and show how I can change it. And when I say the word Azure, this is not an Azure feature. This works everywhere. I'm just demoing it with Azure because we have the cool new Azure stuff that we announced earlier in the week. So I'll go back to my portal here. I'll drill in my database. And all I've got to do is do this download publish profile. I'll say save. It's there. And then over here on my publish, all I got to do is right click, say I want to publish. I'll import that file I just downloaded. Not the one from last night. I'm going to go to settings, and I'm going to give it my connection string. And so what this does is it just is takes that database that I created and lets me say for my database, use that connection string. So when I publish, it'll use the database in the cloud. So now what I'll do is I'll publish this. After seeing some of the keynotes on Monday, I'll pray. So we had some glitches on Monday that occurred when Jason and Scott were out on the stage. The new Azure stuff that we're showing, the new portal, is pretty brand new. And what we found was when people were actually hitting the site before it was published, it got into that weird state that they, if you saw any of their demo snafus, but that's, it might already be fixed by now. So let me go to the person thing here. I can, there on them. So I'm now using a remote database, and I will create this, save this. That's great. So I've done that. But now what happens if I want to go back to my application and change my database? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to my model, and I'm going to go this. I want to add another field. Prop tab, date time, and I'll create a birth date. Now this is interesting. Birth date is a non-nullable field, and I've already got a table, so let me just build that so everything's aware of it. I'm going to go down to my migration window here, and I'm going to say add a migration. And I'm going to say add birth date. And it automatically created, just like it did before, it creates this file for me that shows what we call the up and the down. So the up is add a column called birth date. The down is delete the column called birth date. So this means at any point I could decide I added birth date, I don't like it, and I could go to the console and say update database back to the previous step, and it will go run these commands to take you back to the previous step. Right now, it's adding the columns via some C#, but I also, if I wanted to and I knew what I was doing, I could write my own SQL here as well. I mean, you don't have to use the code that we generate. You can just go and replace it with your own SQL. And as I was saying before, nullable columns are not allowed, so I need to provide a default value. No. Save that. I've got a default value now. And I'm going to do one final step is just to show that. Close these out. I'll now say update database. So let me just show you my database. Right now has these fields. I will now come here. I'll say update database. And after I've done that, I come back to my connection. I refresh. There's my birthday column automatically done. I can come over here. I'll regenerate the controller because I added a column to it. It's faster for me just to regenerate it than to go type the new column into it. It says those things already exist. I'll overwrite them. I'll run. There's the new field already filled in. And that's showing you how I can actually keep my database and my code in sync as I develop. And it goes even further. If I came over to publish, you'll note that there's a setting over here that says apply code first migrations, runs on application start. If I check that and publish to the cloud, we'll run the code first migrations, and we'll update your app in the cloud on the fly as well. I'm running a little bit low on time, so I'm not going to publish one more time. But I want to show one final thing that's part of the cloud. A really cool feature that we just turned on and made available to the public this week is something called TFS in the cloud. And I don't know about you, but I don't know if anybody's ever set TFS up, but it's kind of a bear to set up. One of the cool things about TFS in the cloud is you don't have to set it up. You just go and say, I want TFS, and you're good to go. So what's kind of cool here is I can say set up TFS publishing, and it's going to ask me if I want to go and create a TFS account. So I'll just do this just to show. You can go to TFS preview today, get one of these for free. TFS preview. In this case, I can just log into my account here. And here's my TFS in the cloud. So what I can do is I will lose my mind. First thing I'm going to do is I've got mine wired up already a little bit. So I'm going to come into Team Explorer. It's going to ask me to sign into my TFS in the cloud. Now I'm signed in, and so what I will do is I'll jump back to my project, and I'm going to take this project and just right-click on the solution, and I'm going to say, let's add this solution to source control, and well, this looks fine. Put it in our demo. And one of the cool benefits of this TFS in the cloud, imagine you're a working group and you want to like publish stuff to the web. TFS in the cloud supports doing builds in the cloud as well. So not only when I do a check-in, my code will go up in the cloud. The cloud will actually kick a build off. And if I have it set correctly, it will actually then publish my site to the working site on the fly for me. So the cool thing there is you can have a whole team of folks and not have to worry about having like a build server anywhere because you guys are all remote. So I've got all that stuff in there. I'm going to just check it all in. It's going to say I've got a bunch of files. Check these in. And now once I check these in, I'm going to go back to the Azure portal, and I'm going to tell the Azure portal to actually connect itself to the TFS that I've created in the cloud here. So I'm going to come back over here. I'm going to say set up TFS publishing. and give it my name. Authorize now. Accept. Setting it up. Yep, I want to do demo. It's linking my projects. And then what I'll do is I'm going to go to, back to my app, I'm going to make a change and do a check-in, and then show you that that check-in will actually find its way to the cloud. Okay, I'm all linked up. So let's go back to solution. Let's just go to our index page. Views. Index. And I'll say, we are in TFS now. Save that. And I'll do a check-in of that file. And once I do that, it's checking in the file. And I can come over here, and I can look at builds. And you can see that there's a build queued right there. It says it's queued. If I come over here to TFS, or to the Azure portal, and look at deployments, might not have made it there yet. It will make it here in a second. I'll be able to actually watch it detect that that publish is actually occurring. So what's going on there is when I do that operation, my check-in went up in the cloud, TFS in the cloud, then starts taking my website, compiling it, building it, and then once it builds it, it will go and publish it for me, doing continuous integration directly in the cloud. You can change all these settings so it doesn't actually, you know, republish every time you actually do your thing. Come on, show me. Ooh, I got some kind of error. Oh well, only one demo fail. Anyways, that was the last thing I had to show. I don't trust this cloud stuff. Actually, that was a joke. The stuff with the cloud is, you know, it used to be that you come to one of these shows with a demo prepared for on your laptop, and you know, you control the entire thing. As soon as you start putting all these other elements in, you know, the website, internet, all that kind of stuff comes into play. I've got a couple things I want to show here. I've got my email address. If you have any questions about VS 2012 and web, please email me. I've got my Twitter account here as well. I kind of tweet every day or two about all the stuff going on. We've got two blogs that are really cool. We've got the web development blog, blogs.msdn.com/ignore the B, web dev tools. If you go there, that's where the team that builds all the web tools actually posts blogs about what we're working on and has tutorials and stuff on what we're doing. I've also got a page here called www.asp.net/vnext. This is where all the stuff, frameworks and tooling that we're doing on vNext features goes. Even after we ship VS 2012, if you go to that page, we'll have the next round of stuff that we're working on. We're pretty transparent. I want to thank you guys all for being here, especially early in the morning. I hope you enjoyed what I had to show today, and enjoy the rest of your tech ed.